Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Giles Corran Has No Idea. The cats have eaten my homework, sir, and also my grandma died. So there is no column from me this week and therefore no podcast to discuss what to put in it. So instead, we thought we'd bring you an edition of my favourite part of my radio show, which is called Desert Island Crisps. This is where I take a famous celebrity, shipwreck them on a desert island and force them to regale us with stories about their favourite foods. Sadly, we've not been able to do these interviews during lockdown, but I've dusted off the archives and bring you the very first Desert Island Crisps with everyone's favourite quiz show host, Alexander Armstrong.
Ah, oh, how lovely to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Normally, we would do it, if it weren't for the virus, we'd be doing this on a real desert island.
How lovely. Well, one of the Scottish ones.
With
global warming, you know. Oh, I see.
It's just lockdown. We'd move out to a desert island. But you've had to do it in our home, so thank you for coming here.
It's a pleasure.
So I'm going to ask you, what's your first... I mean, I can see that the first piece of food we're going to talk about is a treacle sponge.
Yes.
I hope it's going to... Is this going to take us back to very near the beginning of Armstrong?
Let's say it does. Yes, I mean it was a constant in the life of my grandparents' house. If we went to stay with them, this was a sort of standard, particularly Sunday lunch. If we were there for a weekend or whatever, lemon chicken, absolutely without fail, and treacle sponge, and a weird pudding called junket.
I've heard of junket only from doing historical reenactment food TV.
Well, listen, you should have come to my grandparents' house.
How long ago was this?
No, it was a while back. No, this is probably pre-2000. Yes, my grandmother died in 2000. So yeah, any time pre then, when I was 30, so the first 30 years of my life. Junket was a sort of weird white set pudding. I'm guessing, totally guessing here, that it's the curds element from curds and whey. I think something a bit like that, where I think milk, you add something to it that goes whoing, 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 separates the two elements. The watery stuff gets poured off.
What's the noise this it makes
stuff,
again?
Whoing, whoing, whoing,
yeah, that's
then
yeah, that's
this stuff, and you grate nutmeg on top of it. Anyway, so we had a Northumbrian granny, and we had a Hertfordshire-based grandmother, and indeed grandfather. I didn't know my paternal grandfather. He died before I was born. Rex Armstrong, in fact, after whom my oldest son is named. He played rugby for England, Rex Armstrong.
Rex already? He's only...
Yeah. No. The grandfather.
Did he?
Yeah. In the 1920s. He was a fullback.
Really? Because I don't think... I mean, you're a great singer, a talented actor, a funny man, very handsome, tall, strong, fit. Not really a sporty type,
no,
though.
No, not really at all. No. No.
And yet you had a grandfather.
And yet I had a grandfather who played rugby for England. Isn't that extraordinary?
Amazing.
I know. Quite extraordinary. Anyway, so yes, I grew up in Northumberland, in literally the middle of nowhere. In fact, that makes it sound very central, the middle of nowhere. No, somewhere in the upper left-hand corner of nowhere. So yes, we really were. We lived.
And what sort of a thing? In a hole in the ground or a
no?
Great palace?
We lived in a farm. We lived in an old farm with no central heating. Yeah, on a very windy hillside. It was heaven. I adored it. We would routinely get snowed in the winter and then flooded in when all the snows melted. It was just great. You know, it was a truant
delight.
And
you go back annually, so it clearly means something to you, this
oh,
windswept
Northumberland.
Place.
Yeah, Northumberland is a heavenly place.
And what were you eating there? I mean, given that this is a thing where we take your life in...
this is a very interesting
point.
What
did people eat in Northumberland?
Gastronomically, Northumberland wasn't really up to a great deal. We grew a lot of things that we ate in our garden. So our kitchen garden would sort of furnish us with very sort of hairy runner beans, endless broccoli, which my mother always used to call calabrese. So we never called it broccoli.
Did she make that up, or is that a name for it?
Well, I am aware now that the Italians call it calabrese, we call it calabrese. I don't know if that's just because we're terrible, pretentious.
On the other hand, I think you were at the forefront because broccoli was not... I mean, broccoli, I think of as an 80s vegetable.
Maybe because my mother, we grew it in the garden. Calabrese, as it was known, was invariably... I mean, if you pick up a bit of the cooked stuff and shake it, out would drop four or five little white caterpillars, which my mother would say, don't get rid of those, that's the protein. And the chorus was, well, they've eaten calabrese all their lives, they're going to have a taste of calabrese. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Like that was going to pass muster with me as a youngster. I remember once being at my grandparents for lunch and a little wormy thing crawling up the side of my plate out of the salad that had just been put there and going, my mother saying, oh, don't be so ridiculous, just eat it. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, so yeah, but other than that, it was the 70s, you know, where things... We were sort of... My mother was a champion of all kinds of things. She was a modernist, really. I mean, all the nice lights in our farm were sort of taken out and replaced with low energy. This is in the 70s. I mean, this is before people knew about environmentalism, per se.
Well, you certainly, with no central heating, you weren't troubling the grid.
Weren't troubling the grid, and we had low energy fluorescent lights all over the place that sort of hummed and flashed. And, you know, so my mother was... We grew up in a house that was sort of zero, you know, on a carbon neutral. I mean, not to say we've been taking carbon out, I think. The amount of carbon we probably ate one way and another. And
I love that you start in this... Your life is going to be a journey to the glittering bright lights of the West End
beginnings. At the end of a single track road, we were a mile from a little village called Pepperhoff. There's not even a village. It's literally a phone box and a post office. I mean, can you imagine? There was a farm, a phone box, and a post office. Imagine getting a post office when there are literally a population of about nine. It's quite something.
And then, so you were ready for a treacle sponge, which came from the grandma in Hertfordshire.
Yes, it's the grandma in Hertfordshire. She would, they always, the food there was incredible. Mind you, you'd find such relics. It was sort of an act of archaeology to open the fridge there. You'd find sort of bits of cake that had been kicking around for at least 4 weeks.
Because they were sort of old and eccentric?
Because they were old and just sort of, yes, I suppose old and eccentric and never would throw anything out. And you'd eat something until it grew feathers itself, whereupon it would then be boiled up and fed to the hens. So, you know.
And this treacle sponge, was this a tinned thing? Or?
No, absolutely not. I'm afraid this is awful poshness.
Don't apologise for this. This is Times Radio. Apologise for poshness. But I love
this. You know, this sounds ludicrous, but my grandmother had a cook.
Right.
Called Kathleen. Lovely Kathleen, who's an Irish... just wonderful woman, and she had a way with a treacle sponge, with a steam pudding. And
you see, that's wonderful. That's proper Downton. You must admit, this is what we want to know. Who do you think you are? We've seen the Duke of Beaufort. We've seen how many. Which is the king? You're related to Danny Dyer, aren't you?
Yeah, we share a king, don't we? Yeah.
Edward the Third.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Edward the Third. In one way, you go one way and you get Danny Dyer. You go the other way, you get Xander with his Kathleen cooking his treacle sponges.
I know. It's just too... It's just... Yes.
It's not.
That's a kind of... Well,
no,
thank you.
This is on the desert island. We don't ask you if you'd like a luxury. And if we did, we wouldn't allow you to be a human. But if we did, you'd say a cook.
And you'd be, although, actually, I love cooking, though. Cooking is... One of the great pleasures, actually, is just putting on some lovely music and getting down to it and doing a bit of... Actually having a... great kitchen-based task that's going to keep you occupied and amused for a...
I suppose for you, this desert island, given that, you know, some people on desert islands choose to take music on this show, we take food. A difficult choice for you, not difficult because you need food to live, but the food or music, because music is also very important to you.
Music is important. I didn't realise quite how much we listened to music as a family until I met Hannah, my wife, who finds it peculiar that I would would really find, I find it very odd not to have music on.
We haven't got it on now because we can't cut this later.
You've got
show. It would be a nightmare.
Rubbish. I mean, what the listener won't realise is we're already 7.25 hours into this. this is the edited version. But but I would always have music. If I come into an empty house, I'll have music on. I suppose partly for company, but partly just because I just love it. I do. It does. It really adds something.
And did you start singing and playing music very, very young?
Yeah, I suppose I did. I did.
To keep warm up in Northumberland.
Keep you warm in Northumberland, exactly. I had this obsession about opera without knowing what opera was, because opera was something Mum and Dad would go off to from time to time. And, you know, they were always so smart. And Mum always smelt delicious going off to the opera. She'd put scent on and things, and you'd wave them off, and you'd think, what is this? An opera? I'd heard opera, which, as far as I was aware, was something that involved a lot of people. And I couldn't quite... I don't think I'd realised that it wasn't a sort of participatory thing, opera. I thought it was something that, when they went,
it was like
a sort of ball.
Like the proms.
Well, you went along and you joined in, you danced and you sang and you did things and you were part of this huge, great sort of, I guess, like a sort of immersive theatre experience. When, in fact, you merely turn up and sit in a velvety seat. It's all you have to do. But music, in that respect, I was obsessed with the idea of opera, despite not knowing what it was. I had a panda bear. I mean, this is just a stuffed, you know, not stuffed, a toy panda, you know.
Stuffed. Not a stuffed, real panda.
Can you imagine?
In the larder with the pheasants and the grouse and the
pandas. A stuffed panda, yes, exactly. No, I had a toy panda that was about sort of a foot high. And Panda and I would go off to the opera every night. This was my sort of thing that I would, you know, I'd always say I was going to, Panda and I would go to the opera. And so I go to bed, and the next morning they'd say, how was the opera? I go, oh, it was marvellous. Again, I have no idea exactly what the opera was.
I also love the fact that you're slightly apologetic about the poshness of having a cook, but not about the poshness of going to the opera every night with your panda.
I didn't know what it was.
No.
But it didn't lessen my delight when I then discovered what it was.
Let's move on from treacle sponge to the next thing, which I have down as a pie. Pie is important to you.
Oh, pie.
I mean, I may have a... You tell me about pies. There may be one in the oven.
Okay.
Why are we talking about pies?
Well, pies. A pie was a very early delight for me. I went off to school... Again, this just... I'm going to apologise the whole way through this.
You keep apologising.
I went... Oh, my God. Goodness, look at that.
Well, there's two pies, actually, aren't there? That's the one I got. Ben, the producer, it may be fine. That's what's called a pucker pie.
Yeah, that's closer to the pie I'm thinking of. But that is closer to my heart, if you see what I'm saying.
So
the pucker pie. Basically, when I was little, I grew up as the youngest of three children. Ravenous Northumbrians, all of us. And it basically meant being the youngest, you got the sort of scrapings at the end of the pie, basically. Oh, my word. That's what I'm looking at now is a pie in a... This has come from a posh baker somewhere.
Okay, this has come from...
A posh butcher somewhere around.
This has come from a very posh butcher this morning. I was on the way back from the school run, because we're not heavily financed, and we don't have whole teams. On the way back from the school run, I stopped off... there was a certain thing which we're going to come to later... which was talked about, and Esther phoned and found a place, a posh butcher in Hampstead that had them, so I swung by there, bought them, went in, saw this rather good-looking pie. So this is a beef bourguignon pie.
Oh,
the cat has arrived on the table.
Yes, the cat's arrived.
Smelling the pie. But actually, I texted Ben, and he'd already got a pucker pie, so we'll try both of them. But so, the pies were important to you at home?
Pies were important, but anything that came individually packaged was a bonus. Yogurt and pies, two of my early loves. And I think it all comes down ultimately to the fact that you were given your own, and it came in a sort of a discreet amount of food was mine,
and it couldn't be stolen by
older brother, older sister, ditto yogurt pots, anything that came in its own massive fortified sealed container, I loved. So I mean. Oh, sorry.
No, I don't want more. Some. We're both on this desert island together. No wonder you like individually wrapped pies. I've given you most of that enormous pie and you go after it. You can have the whole pucker pie.
Oh, thanks. Jiley lifted up the spoon there in what I thought was a sort of gesture of a bit more pie. And, of course, he hadn't yet put any on his own plate. So I'm having some pie.
But listen, the pucker pie is all for you.
Listen, lovely.
It's warm, it's delicious. And these individual pies, but you went off to school, and I gather that did you have a pie day?
Wednesday was pie day at school. Wednesday for lunch. And also Wednesday was a half day, which is a fabulous thing. So
so where did you go? You couldn't go home.
No, you couldn't go home. No, you just didn't do any lessons. You just mucked about.
Is this the sort of pie you had at school?
This is a considerably nicer pie. But there's something about school food that teaches you to be extremely happy eating stuff that's been mass-produced. So I get very excited about good food, but equally really excited about terrible food as well. Remember, growing up in the 70s, you know, where we were a margarine family. I mean, my mother thought it was tremendously good for us to have margarine. And we used to go to our cousins' houses who had butter and go, they've got butter. We go, really? God, this, they've got butter. They've got butter, look. We kind of, you know, our living standards were incredibly modest. Partly because I guess they had to pay to send, you know, they had to send us up to school because that was it. There was a school in our village which was brilliant. The primary school in our village was great, but they taught ITAs. You weren't taught to read normal script. This was the 70s where they ran a sort of experimental program. They found a few outlying parts of the country where they didn't think it would matter very much, I guess. And they thought, well, they can learn. They'd have to learn normal stuff. We're going to do this experiment on them and teach them the initial teaching alphabet, ITA, which has a sort of, it's sort of like a phonetic script. So that's what we were taught. All our books in school were written in ITA.
Not with normal letters?
Not in normal letters.
Can you read now?
I can now. My brother still can't spell to save his life.
Really? Because of
that? Yeah, because of that.
Now, look.
I can try the bagpipe.
This was sold to me. This reason I went out of my way to pick up this, this delicious pie and Ben brought it is because you told him that about Pie Wednesdays at school and an HP sauce. So I need a story about school, Pie Wednesday and HP sauce, and then I'll let you have
Pie Wednesday. I wasn't going to put any HP sauce on that pie because that's a cracking pie. But this pucker pie, by the way, which also looks delicious, is going to be greatly enhanced by a bit of the HP brown sauce. I mean, HP sauce. I think there's some ancient Roman thing. Do you remember they used to make something out of fish guts? There was some Roman
sauce. Yes, fermented fish guts. Garum, I think.
Exactly, garum.
When I did the show Supersizers Go Roman with your old Cambridge buddy Sue Perkins.
Yeah,
we'll get to Cambridge eventually if I manage to pull this off. We ate garum. Oh, it's disgusting. Just fermented fish guts. It's a sort of early version of Worcester sauce, but just not in any way nice. But I think it through the when you get to HP sauce, you've still got some sort of anchovy or something, haven't you?
I think there's something in here. I have a feeling that they keep it a secret, don't they? The people who make this. Well, maybe they don't. Not much of a secret. I've got the ingredients list right here on the side. But anyway, somewhere in the sort of secret ingredients of this, I'm sure there's some garum. I'm going to load this on my plate.
You're going to have that whole...
Look at that.
I'm now quite jealous of it, but look at that. That's what you meant, isn't it? Well, no, because you want to have it all to yourself. You're going to have terrible flashbacks to childhood and... No, the pie.
Yeah.
But you see, I think when you then cut it in half, does it disappoint in the middle or...?
No, I don't think it does. I think that's all right. It's got a sort of pleasing... Something wonderfully mass-produced about the innards of this.
Well, this was Ben. That was a pound, wasn't it? That pie. So Ben spent a pound on that. I spent
well spent.
This was this large pie from the butcher is a 14-quid pie. I think you're right. I think it was $12.95. But I got it for whatever half of that is, which is $6.47.5, because it was on sale.
That's amazing.
Is it good?
That pucker pie has got something. I think that might have been a bit of second kidney. I think. It's got something of it. Yeah, please do.
Thanks.
It's got a... There's something pleasingly renal, if that's the word, about that
I'm afraid
that
is the word, isn't it? Renal is kidneys, isn't it? When you say it's got a renal... I just want to say for people worried about the coronavirus and listening, I reached for the pie off Dander's plate with a pair of 2-metre chopsticks. Oh, my word.
Mm. Oh, see, it's good. You can see.
It's good with the sauce.
With the sauce.
Because it fully covers up the renality.
Yeah. You're completely right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Nice.
So boarding school, we moved on. You were boarding at prep school very young, which is not fashionable now.
No.
And you went on to board lately. Carried on boarding forever, basically.
I did.
Did you want to go home to your parents? Was there any kind of...
Prep school was miserable. I mean, I loved it in the end. I made some great friends there. I left early to go up to a weird music school up in Edinburgh. And thus was my, I think, was my path into later into show business decided.
We've got to show business. You enjoyed that mouthful of pie, and I'll fill, because that's what radio hands do, as you know, being where we saw. Xander is also, Xander, often on Desert Island, Chris, people just chat and poke at their food. But Xander has been up. What time did you get up in Oxford this morning? 5 or something like that?
Yeah, 5.30.
5.30, car into town, on the radio, Classic FM, doing the breakfast show at what, 9?
Oh, I see. Do people normally just pay up? Just...
No, no, no. It's quite... This is your lunch break. I can just
this
talk while you eat.
This is your lunch break. That's the television version of this.
Wait a minute. Should we ever have any legal problems with Desert Island Crisps, and I can't see why we would, this is your lunch break.
Come on.
Alexander Armstrong, you thought you were coming here to record one fairly hackneyed rip-off sequence, but no! This afternoon, Alexander Armstrong, star of Pointless, Classic FM, Armstrong and Miller, this is your lunch break.
That's great. You hand me that massive file, and that's
the
menu.
It's a menu! But this is a format.
Oh, how wonderful. And some of these are wines, wow.
The next thing I see here is a Caramac, and it's apparently that's your tuck shop treat. That's an odd choice, the Caramac. People who don't remember
I tell you what.
Can you remind them what it is?
Caramac, what I'm looking at now, the packaging of this, I mean, I'm not sure I'd go anywhere near it. It says at the top, no artificial colours, flavours or preservatives, in the most artificially coloured and flavoured...
I think that's a promise about the chocolate bar, surely, rather than the packaging.
I know, but the packaging of that... The Caramac that we used to have... came in gold foil that slid in and out, rather like, you know, like chocolate bars used to, where the thing would be wrapped in foil, and then it would have a sort of paper tube around it, essentially, a sort of mattress cover that it would slide in and out of. Mm-hmm. Nearest thing, like Kit Kats do, just for the kids.
Although Kit Kats often have those awful sheets now.
No, they do now. But Caramac...
Why Caramac? Because, first of all, yes, the colours are terrible. It's orange and yellow. That's nature's warning.
I mean, that is nature's warning.
And is there any chocolate in a Caramac?
I don't know, but it's a very pleasing white chocolate. It's somewhere between milk chocolate and a Milky Way. And the colour of Caramac, I mean, that... Oh, we used to go down to
Scott's... Look at that colour. It's the colour of butter.
Scott's shop in Rothbury, which was our... That wasn't the village we lived a mile away from, Pepperhalf. This was the metropolis we lived 4.5 miles away from. Rothbury, sort of a beautiful village in Northumberland. And there was a proper old sweet shop there. And we'd go into Scott's and we'd buy up the Caramac. And basically my brother would be the sort of looker-afterer of Caramac. And we'd walk back up home. You have to walk up through 3 fields to get back up to our house. And every so often we'd stop. And my brother, with great seriousness, would break off a piece of Caramac for each of us. And we'd just eat it and go... and discuss how we ate it. Do you bite yours? No, I just put mine on my tongue and suck it until it's all just gone to mush. And then we'd walk on up another field, and then maybe Dominic would break off another little bit of Caramac. So Caramac, you know,
it's a rural sort of Thomas Hardy story with vegetable fats, sugar, lactose, sweetened condensed skim milk, skim butterfat, treacle flavouring and salt. May contain gluten. To describe the taste, I haven't tasted one of these in 40 years. I never chose it. I thought it was neither here nor there, neither a milky bar nor...
I mean, it's the first time
a...
I've tasted Caramac for a very, very, very long time. It's funny. Yeah, that was nice.
Is it bringing you back? Is it putting you back in that field with your brother?
No, I'm not sure if it tastes exactly... There were various flavours we used to have when we were little, one of which was butterscotch. What happened to butterscotch? Was that the salted caramel of our day?
Butterscotch, mostly exposed to it via the medium of Angel Delight.
Angel Whip, exactly. Or Instant Whip, which was our version of it. The margarine version was Instant Whip.
When you say that you have this at the tuck shop, which school was this? Prep school?
No, we didn't have a tuck. No, God, a prep school.
Oh, you mean prep the tuck school. Shop literally in town in the village?
No, there's a tuck shop at Big School.
Big School. Oh, good. So we've moved on to Big School.
Oh, yeah, we've moved on to Big School.
Here we are at Big School. I want to be at Big School.
Yeah,
tell me about Big School.
Yay,
You've been to the music school.
Been to the music school.
Where have you gone to Big School?
I went on a music scholarship to Durham School. Durham Cathedral is just, by the way, the most beautiful building in the country. I adore Durham Cathedral.
And did you sing in it as a kid then?
Well, we would. We were attached to the cathedral. I mean, the cathedral has its own proper cathedral choir. But as sort of the musicians and the music scholars and the choir of Durham School, we were their sort of stand-in choir. You know, we'd come along and... do our bit, a few services a term. By the time I got to Durham School, I loved being at boarding school, by the way. Boarding school, as a nipper of seven, Not so good, unsurprisingly. Really quite a traumatic experience. Either I was so cauterized by that experience that I was just numb to anything. But I don't think that's the case.
Do you think the misery you had as a seven-year-old
was just because I was a seven-year-old being ripped away from, you know, taken out of my home? And it's a slightly rough environment because boys, again, it was an all boys school. Boys are pretty vile people, really, by and large. They have one or two saving graces, but they tend not to emerge until adolescence and beyond, really. Mm-hmm. So at that age, it's a fairly savage environment, and you weren't allowed any tuck, by the way. You were given one bar of something on a Sunday, and you had about 2 hours to eat it. And anyone who was left with any tuck, we always sent off with things called tuck boxes, but we weren't allowed any tuck to put in them. Where's the logic in that?
That's very, very mean.
Very mean indeed. But yes, there were things like fire practices. You'd have to have where the fire alarm would go off in the middle of the night, and everyone had to go. And we didn't know at that stage if it was a practice or if it was the real thing. And everyone had to grab a dressing gown and you know, get out of bed and file down to the dining hall, where then it's not actually a fire. It's fine. And actually, funny enough, that was the thing that scared me more than anything else in my early childhood. Not until I discovered the concept of nuclear war did anything scare me as much as the idea of fire practice.
Do you think your problems now, not problems, but occasional troubles in getting to sleep, you were saying with your new radio show, you've got to get up so early and sometimes you don't sleep in the night, or you wake up at 2 a.m. Could it be
it goes back to the absolute heart-palpitating terror of the possibility at any moment that suddenly... It's like a sort of...
Was that the noise?
Yeah, it was like an air raid sign.
We'll be back with more Desert Island Crisps after a short interlude. To get more from The Times, why not treat yourself to a subscription? And we will give you the first month free. Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app. Past Imperfect with Rachel Sylvester and Alice Thompson, a weekly series of in-depth interviews with high-profile figures examining how overcoming the challenges of their early lives shaped the people they've become. This week, Bake Off winner, TV chef and author Nadia Hussein reveals the violent racial abuse she suffered as a British Bangladeshi in 1980s Luton, her struggles with mental health and how baking has changed her life.
Racism and that kind of unconscious bias exists in every industry. And so now that I'm in them, I see the problem with them is that there is nobody else.
Past Imperfect with Rachel Sylvester and Alice Thompson. Nadia Hussein, in her own words. Now available as a podcast. Listen on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The next food thing I've got down here is beef stew. We can probably gloss through it quite quickly because we've eaten one in a pie form there. But it says here, in this sort of research conversation that you had with Ben, which I need to have done even when I'm related to the people I'm talking to, there's a lovely sentence where he said, after finishing school, she sent me and my siblings to a cordon bleu cooking camp. And I thought, you went to finishing school? marvellous, no wonder you speak so nicely. And then I realised that it was after finishing school.
I can climb in and out of a car without showing my knickers. It's amazing.
But you don't bother. What I want to know is a cordon bleu cookery camp. Tell me about that. You left school. You were about to go to Cambridge, I believe, is the thing. And you went to, what happened at the cordon bleu cooking camp?
We went to the Hexham School of Cookery for an intensive 2-week course where it was the hardest work I'd done. I mean, this is after my A-levels. A-levels were a walk in the park compared to that. You know, we'd go and we'd spend the morning being drilled in making roux or making short crust pastry or puff pastry or whatever it was. And then we'd be sent back home with things we had to do that night. And we'd be cooking till about 11. And of course, it was a very hot summer. And there were six of us doing it, so working in three teams of two. And in a kitchen with a massive arga belching out heat. And the idea, you know, a proper kitchen should be quite cool, you know, things were just melting. You'd be busy sort of rolling your pastry and all the butter would be running out of it because it was so hot. I mean, nothing that, you know, people on Bake Off haven't had to contend with.
Have you done Celebrity Bake Off?
No, never have.
So you came out of cordon bleu cooking camp with a beef stew.
Knowing how to make a stew. I mean, what a great thing to be able to do at the age of 18, where actually you can, because a stew, there's something about a stew that's just, is very homely. You know, it's something that comes out of a casserole. You chop up all this stuff, you roll it in flour, brown it, bung it in. It looks desperately unappetizing when it's sort of sitting there and you top it up with water and maybe a little of wine. And then in it goes into the oven. And then magically, sort of 2 hours, 3 hours later, out it comes. And and if you can pull that trick off.
Well, it front loads the effort, doesn't it? It's very therapeutic cooking, and it doesn't have to look that nice at the end because it all comes out brown, and you listen to your music, and you chop, 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 and you put it in, and there's
no
stress. And you can
imagine being at university and being able to make stew and being able to produce that. Everyone was deeply impressed.
So in a nutshell then, Cambridge, because I've been, as ever, fascinated as I was by our early life. We've dwelled too long on the early.
We have, oh my God.
So let's shoot through Cambridge.
Shoot through it.
Famous contemporaries there. I mean, sort of, Footlights, did you do any of that?
I did a bit of Footlights. It took me a long time to pluck up the courage to do it, though. Contemporaries. There's sort of famous names of Footlights. I was there. Sue Perkins, of whom I'm sure you've heard.
Girl with the glasses.
That's the one. Yes, exactly. And Mel, obviously, Mel Gedroy. Andy Parsons, Henry Naylor.
And you were a choral scholar then?
I was a choral scholar, yeah.
And so singing for your supper?
Singing very much for my supper. That's a huge commitment. The Trinity Choir is a big deal, actually. It's a sort of you become a professional singer for the time you're there. I mean, you know, throughout the term, you have to do, I think, 5 services a week. But it's a good 12 hours a week commitment in terms of.
So, do you mean you were very, very good? I mean,
you have to. Yeah, I was a very good singer when I was younger, and I mean, this happens a lot. You must know a lot of people at university who were very good at acting or comedy or singing or sport, particularly. Mm-hmm. You know, and they get to the end of. You come to the end of your 3 years there. You know, if you're a cricketer who's played for Oxford or Cambridge, you've had a little taste of first class cricket, which is exciting. And then, you know, if you're sort of on the cusp of thinking, well, do I think about taking this up seriously? Is this something I'm going to commit to and make something of? Or do you think, nah? And I did. I really did think, I'm just going to miss this so much. I mean, this is such a huge deal. And I've been doing it all my life. So music was a big, big part of it. I thought, actually, do you know what? I'm not going to do no professional stuff. I mean, you know, it was another couple of years at the Royal College or something like that where you'd have to hone the skill a bit, polish it up a bit. Mm-hmm. I just thought no. And actually it's a hell of a life if you're a professional musician. It's, you know, you've got to get your pleasures from the performance because you live your life. If you're lucky enough to be employed a lot, you live your life eating and living out of suitcases, basically, and that's.
And so so after you left, you went off to do comedy, and did you go to abroad or something?
I did. I went off some friends. It's just too awful to talk about my year off. But in my year off, I mean, God, I've talked about everything else. Might as well. I'd worked in the British Virgin Islands. I'd got a job at a restaurant there and became great friends with the people who ran it. And they had they put on a show every night after dinner. There'd be a they had this guy who'd sit and sort of tell funny stories and sing songs at the piano. And I thought, I quite fancy that. So I did. I got a job out there with a friend of mine, David Wollstonecroft, who's another Footlight contemporary. We went out and did that. And I think that's what kind of, because I had no idea what I was going to do at university. I had no idea. You know, when other people, even in our second year, some people were going off to have interviews with ICI and things like that. And, you know, some had decided they were going to go into the city, or some had already got themselves onto sort of law conversion courses or whatever. Mm. And I was thinking,
boring.
I was hoping at one point the clouds would part and, you know, a bright light would shine and say, you will also work for ICI. and I'd know that was, you know.
And you went back to the Virgin Islands afterwards?
And yeah, not having anything else to do, the people who ran that place had said, if you're ever at a loose end, you want to come out and do a residency here, you could.
Is there by any chance a food thing that goes with this? I'm looking down at a thing that says penne pasta slow-fried mixed pepper with chorizo, chilies and paprika.
Oh, come on, let's make it up. Let's pretend it does. No, that's just something I love cooking. Right. Penne pasta it's slow-cooked. Oh, yeah, this is a thing I learnt in the Virgin Islands.
Yes, thank you.
This is a thing I learnt to cook there.
While singing, yes, great.
While singing.
Realising what you wanted to be was to sing and perform and make penne.
Yes, exactly.
And that's why it's one of your dishes for the desert island.
Absolutely right, because it takes me straight back to the Caribbean. And, and the music.
Well, they're famous for their penne pasta.
Aren't they? Yes.
And the slow-fried mixed pepper with chorizo.
That's I can't remember how I came across it. I think I made it up. A pasta with slow-fried peppers cooked with some hot smoked paprika and a bit of chorizo.
And no doubt, your soon-to-be comedy partner Ben Miller, probably, is when he tasted your penne.
When he tasted my penne, he was on board. Yeah, of course.
So how soon? When did Armstrong and Miller begin?
Well, I came back from the theatre from the Caribbean, and was so thrilled because my parents allowed me to go and live up in London. I was expecting this was going to be a difficult conversation, where basically I was going to have, you know, not having a job or anything like that. I was imagining I was going to have to live in Northumberland and. I wasn't really sure how I was going to make ends meet. So it was all quite an interesting and slightly rudderless period of my life. And I came back, you know, I graduated from Cambridge that summer, just worked for 4 months out in the Caribbean and came back to live up in London, was allowed various people would sort of give me a bed or a sofa. I was that annoying person. But it was great. I had some cousins who had a spare room on a barge down in Chiswick, so I sort of lodged there.
You were a wandering hobo.
Fantastic. What it was.
A minstrel.
But luckily, there were lots of other wandering hobos of friends from Cambridge. So Ben Miller was one of them. I didn't particularly know he was, but I have to say I'm not proud of this, but I elbowed David Wollstonecroft, my erstwhile. The guy I went out to the Caribbean to do comedy with there, literally, I'm afraid I started working with Ben, and Ben and I had a very particular, it just worked. There was something really lovely about our, we had a very similar sense of humour and pastiche, I think. And I'm afraid I rather unceremoniously jumped ship from working with David to working with Ben. Which is, I think, it's not a nice thing to have done, but it worked very well. Anyway, Ben and I then went up to Edinburgh, having been a double act for about 6 months in 1994, and realised that actually it was largely because it was just friends of ours in the audience in London. We weren't actually that good, so we had a very indifferent reception up there in 1994. Came back, didn't do 95, but went back in 1996 and got nominated for the Perrier. And that was suddenly when it all just suddenly came up roses. But after Edinburgh, Ben and I went off to Malaysia. We went off on a writing holiday to get stuff done. Because
that a writing holiday in inverted commas or a...
No, an actual genuine writing holiday. We genuinely did some work. We did also have a fabulous time. And that was where I discovered Nasi Lemak, which is my next food choice.
Ah! As opposed to a singer of exciting Malaysian songs.
I mean, yeah, exactly. That sounds like
the one, yes. The only Nasi Lemak. What am I thinking of? This,
yes.
Steve Lemak, I'm thinking of. But that's
Return
something
of
else. Lemak. The Big Mac.
Yeah. Nasi, they have that for breakfast, Nasi Lemak.
And that's what you ate in Malaysia while writing these?
Yeah.
It's a sort of, I mean, it's a curry. I know what it is, but tell our...
It's a curry with I mean, I can't remember what sort of curry it is, but it's got, you put these little dried ikan bilis fish on and nuts and fairly coarse chopped fiery chili. And actually, first time I had it, I thought just a dare to myself, as I, you know, those hotels where they have breakfast sort of laid out and there's a buffet and you wander around. I thought, well, I'll just for fun, I'll see what this is like. And then took them, thought, why would you have curry for breakfast? Next day, straight to the Nasi Lemak. And every day thereafter. What a way to start the day. You know, breakfast with zing.
And do you eat it now or not? Have you eaten it since?
I have had it since, actually. It's still delicious. I mean, there's a Zheng, the great Chinese restaurant in Oxford.
Yes.
Outside whose restaurant, huge, great laminated notices from Giles Corran of the Times.
I haven't been for a while, so if it's still good, I hope it's still good.
It's still pretty good, yeah. We love Zheng.
And there's no, you haven't mentioned you're not taking any PIMS with you. Around about the time that met, you were Mr.
Yes,
PIMS. You couldn't walk down a street without people coming up.
Hey!
Three of you, two
o'clock.
Of us.
Yes. PIMS came a knocking at my door in 2002, maybe, I think. That was... I'd been signed up to do the most enormous load of advertising for ITV Sport. Do you remember ITV Sport used to exist? And they bought up the football rights. They bought up the television rights for so much football that everyone thought it was going to kill them. And it killed them. Meanwhile, I'd been making all these ads for them. We'd made tons. And it looked like it was going to be just, you know, it was going to be jam today and jam for several years, I think. On the ITV Sport front, and then ITV folded, and the nice agency who were making the who made the adverts said, "What do you want to do about this? Because we owe you. we're quite a lot in your debt, but obviously that they've all gone. ITV Sport doesn't exist anymore. So what do you want to do about that?" And I said, "Well, no." Doesn't bother me. I had a lovely time, but if next time something fun comes along, give me a shout, and I'll see if I'm appropriate for it. And, the next thing that came along for them was PIMS, and so they came straight to me, which was lovely.
And that was the days when advertising campaigns were huge, and I mean, you probably made you as famous as anything else then.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I was probably best known for as being the PIMS man. In fact, when Pointless first aired on television...
Ah, you've come to Pointless. Excellent. You're moving the narrative along as we come towards the close of the hour.
When Pointless first aired on BBC Two, in fact, at sort of 2:30 in the afternoon...
And when was that?
In 2009, Adrian Gill reviewed it in the culture section. Said, Pointless truly is a terrible programme. It's basically the man from PIMS... desperately trying to think of things to say to the commonalty or something along those lines. Truly terrible programme. Anyway, luckily, it's still going.
Yes, I think we can safely say he was wrong.
Yeah.
At this stage of the game, I have to say, we on Desert Island Crisps, I know that when you did your research conversation with Ben and he said, what about some crisps? And you said, crisps.
Oh, favourite crisps. Yes.
Well, you said either
salt and vinegar, if we're in the normal realm... Or if I'm allowed to be just ludicrously poncy, then I go for the black truffle, which is, and you've even, there is only one brand of black truffle crisp, and it's the Torres.
I believe it is.
The thing about Torres that I know is, you know, like most crisp packets, you can open very easily. You could drive a car over these and they wouldn't open. luckily.
You've got some scissors. You're opening your bag with the scissors. That's a sort of non-you thing, is it? There's really well-brought-up people.
No, that'd be the most non-you thing in the world.
I've never seen a packet of crisps opened with... Have you ever seen that, Ben? Never seen a packet of crisps opened with a... Does it smell nice?
Hold that to the microphone in case I get a whiff of that. I'm sticking my nose into the crisp bag, and that lovely sort of, what is it? I mean, so yes, the truffly smell.
Famously bummy, isn't it?
It's a bit bummy. I was going to say bummy. That was exactly what I was going to
say. Bummy. You can say bummy. I mean,
it's a bit bummy. And I was discussing this with the wine man, Matthew Jukes. We were talking about some wines. He said some wines are a bit bummy, and he said, but it's just a taste that you know, that could so easily go into something really bleh.
That's a lot of the great foods are. It's true of a lot of truffles. It's true of a lot of some cured meat and hams. Beer, a lot of English beer smells quite farty.
And also the old renal kidneys had
everything,
a certain
bumminess. Things are dogs. Cheese, a lot of cheese is bummy. Mm. And your dog.
When our dogs fart, the smell is of Caliber alcohol-free lager.
I wouldn't want to have an alcohol-free dog farm. Yeah. No, I don't know about that. But it's just, you know, a lot of pleasures in life are closely linked, and there are a lot of things, whether they're sexual or fecal or nutritional, and they all sort of come together in a great, some things are fresh, some things are less fresh.
Earthy.
But so Pointless has sort of made you a star, made you wealthy beyond the dreams of men. And then, but then now you, despite being on all the time, I know you only record Pointless, 3 months of the year or something? You or how many, is it more than that?
Well, we now do them in sort of massive tranches. So we'll do, each commission is about, I think the next lot we're going to do is 230 odd shows, which gets spread very nicely across. So we'll do, it's incredibly intensive, but...
Hard work, boring?
Never boring. Tiring.
How many in a day?
4. But all right. I mean, it's the rounds are always good. The contestants are usually very well chosen. So, and the chemistry between the contestants. And Richard is always lovely. I mean, he's just always, always good fun to do it with. You know, we make each other laugh. And that actually is about as much fun as a job should really by rights be.
But then you've taken another one.
Another one because I wasn't doing anything in the mornings.
But you weren't doing anything in the mornings, and you were in Oxford in the mornings.
That's true. We live in Oxford, which is not ideal for the London-based classical.
It'd be really convenient if you were a lecturer in anthropology or something, wouldn't it?
Well, listen, my evenings are still free.
So you get up in the morning, you love classical music, you've sort of come back to, you have in the meantime had a couple of classical albums that have done incredibly well, top of the charts and all that.
Yeah.
You've come back to what? To your first love?
I have come back to my first love, and I genuinely have. I have two first loves. I love wanging on about stuff, and I love playing music to people. And, you know, that's now what I get to do.
So, ooh, listen to this. No, everyone,
exactly. Listen to this. Ooh, and listen to this. Yeah.
But you've got this classic. I mean, obviously, listeners to Times Radio will set their alarms to get up and listen to Stig and Asthma. But I mean,
I don't want to be taking anyone away from Matt Chorley. But but you know, if they fancied some music, just a musical interlude, there I am.
If they could during the news, they could turn off Matt Chorley for 4 minutes and go. Or they could come to listen again to listen to you, because Times Radio you need to listen to be really first with all the news and opinions here on. I don't know if that's one of our slogans. Then they could come back to your morning show after.
I am a convert to the morning show, to the Stig and Asthma.
Are you?
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
What do you like about it?
Well, I genuinely like it. I genuinely like the fact it's not designed to make you furious in a way. There's another famous morning current affairs program.
I've never heard it. I've never ripped off any of their formats. I'm not aware of this version of which you speak.
No.
But I'm so glad you're a fan of Times Radio.
Yeah, no, I am. I like it a lot. I've heard Mariella's show. I've heard a bit of Matt's show. I haven't heard Hugo's show on Saturdays. I'd quite like to hear that.
No, you can listen to it tomorrow. Oh, unless you're lecturing in anthropology or advertising something or recording Pointless or presenting Classic FM, I suppose you're not on a Saturday.
Not on a Saturday. No, well, I do a Saturday afternoon show, so 1 till 3.
That's the one where my children go, it's Uncle Xander, when we have it on. If they're not listening to, watching Hey Dougie with Uncle Xander on, or Danger Mouse with Uncle Xander. Your final food thing for the desert island, is it the most important?
I think it probably is. Yeah, I think it is. Wine.
Wine.
Wine. I mean, why would you not? I mean, why would you not? It's got to be lovely wine, and that's asking a lot of the desert. I don't know what the cellar scenario is.
I pulled a bottle of 2004 Langlois Barton, which is decent.
Yeah,
it's decent
lovely
stuff. It's not sort of you know, first growth.
Oh, but the langur is amazing. I think that's absolutely delicious.
I thought it would go quite well with the pie or the truffle chips. But
yes.
As you're on your way from one other job, stopping off to do this and heading off to do more jobs and not sleeping again for another month, I didn't think we decided...
Do you know what? Well, we decided we might sort of save it up. We'll have it when we haven't got work to do, I guess. But the thing is, you can't just have a glass of that.
No.
I mean, you know. Where's the pleasure in that?
And it's mostly claret for you, is that when you say
wine? No, burgundy I love. White burgundy I particularly love. Red burgundy I'm learning about. I get very excited about some red burgundies. My brother is a big burgundy fan.
And have you got a bit of a cellar at the moment?
A bit of one. None of it's at home. That's the trouble, because it's all in... there's nowhere to keep it at home. So it lives in a cellar down just outside Bristol.
And you go and visit it from time to time?
No, I know they just tell me when things are ready for drinking and I forget about them. And then I'm suddenly in a panic, order lots to get things delivered that usually long after they've sort of passed their best.
But you can't, are you still drinking with a will in the evenings when you've got to get up so early?
Not really, no.
That'll last you out then, what you've got already?
I guess it probably will. I guess, you know, holidays. Holidays then, that'll be nice.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
It's a huge pleasure.
Telling us about your desert island crisps.
Lovely, thank you.
You've been listening to a special edition of Giles Corran Has No Idea with my special guest, Alexander Armstrong, with his Desert Island Crisps. This is a Wireless Studios production produced by Ben Mitchell. And don't forget, you can listen to the podcast on the Times Radio app, and you can also subscribe to us wherever else you get your podcast. Esther and I will be back next week, and you can tune in for the live experience on my Times Radio show every Friday from 1 till 4.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.